Be sure there are pockets of wealth and influence, and I am willing to wager that a few people are wealthier and more influential than they were before. That's always the way with disasters, I said. What? They're never bad news for everyone. Something nasty always rises to the top. As we descended further, I thought about cover stories and camouflage. I hadn't given much thought to either, but weapons and logistics aside, that was the way I usually operated, preferring to adapt to my surroundings as I found them, rather than to plan things in advance. But what about Rivage? He couldn't have known about the plague, which meant that any plans he'd formulated would have been in disarray as soon as he learned what had happened. But there was a vital difference. Rivage was an aristocrat, and they had webs of influence which reached between worlds, often based on familial ties which reached back centuries. It was possible, likely even, that Rivage had connections among Chasm City's elite. Those connections would have been useful to him even if he hadn't managed to contact them before his arrival, but they'd have been even more useful if he'd been able to signal them while he was on his way here, forewarning them. A lighthugger moved at nearly the speed of light, but it had to speed up and slow down at either end of its journey. A radio signal from Sky's Edge, sent just before the Orvieto's departure, would have reached Yellowstone a year or two in advance of the ship itself, giving his allies that much time to prepare for his arrival. Or perhaps he had no allies. Or they existed, but the message had never got through, lost in the confusion that was the system's communications net, and condemned to bounce endlessly between malfunctioning network nodes. Or perhaps there just hadn't been time to arrange for a message to be sent at all, or it hadn't crossed his mind. I'd have liked to have drawn comfort from any of those possibilities, but the one thing I never counted on was having luck on my side. It was generally simpler that way. I looked out the window again, seeing Chasm City for the first time as the clouds parted, and thought, he's down there, somewhere, waiting and knowing. But even then the city was too large to take in, and I felt a crushing sense of the enormity of the task that lay ahead of me. Give up now, I thought. It's impossible. You'll never find him. But then I remembered Gita. The city nestled within a wide, jagged crater wall, 60 kilometers from side to side, and nearly 2 kilometers high at its tallest point. When the first explorers arrived here, they had sought shelter from Yellowstone's winds within the crater, building flimsy air-filled structures that would have survived 5 minutes in the true Badlands. But they'd also been lured by the chasm itself, the deep, sheer-sided, mist-enshrouded gully at the geometric center of the crater. The chasm belched perpetual warm gas, one of the outlets for the tectonic energy pumped into the core during the encounter with the gas giant. The gas was still poisonous, but much richer in free oxygen, water vapor, and other trace gases than any comparable outgassing anywhere on Yellowstone's surface. The gas still needed to be filtered through machinery before it could be breathed, but that process was much simpler than it would have been elsewhere, and the scalding heat could be used to drive immense steam turbines, supplying as much energy as any burgeoning colony could use. The city had sprawled across the entire level surface of the crater, surrounding the chasm at its heart and spilling some way into its depths. Structures were perched on perilous ledges hundreds of meters below the chasm's lip, connected by elevators and walkways. Most of the city, however, lay under a vast toroidal dome, encircling the chasm. Quirrenbach told me the locals called it the Mosquito Net.